come on, here we go again, motherfucker, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here, too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand, I can't feel anything. It isn't like I want to sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Come on. Now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit.
Country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men, and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Thursday, November 24th, 2005. This would be Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit Rep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. RAN Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this program, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, and you can currently get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. Now let's get straight into some feedback right off the top. I always get, I'm always talking about politics. Politics, politics, politics. It's always something that kind of goes along because I'm not really too sure I agree with the way a lot of political setups seem to be running. You know, and when you look at a lot of in history, the ones that seem to last the longest seem to be empires. You know, that seem to be the ones that seem to last the longest amount of time. Maybe not, it all depends on sort of your kind of view on personally, how you view empires, those sort of things. But it can't really be denied that empires seem to last the longest. You know, I mean, there hasn't been any other country model that I've seen that has seemed to last longer. Maybe I'm wrong here. You know, someone can educate me as to that. But, but I got this feedback here. Dear Sean, I implore you not to unduly judge the performance of the Republican form of government by the travesty the United States has made of it. Well, I don't think they've really made that much of a travesty of it when you think about it. I mean, when you look at how far the United States has come along than any other country, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things people like to point the fingers at the United States and say, look how bad this is, look how bad that is. But consider countries like Morocco or, you know, Russia and things like that where, you know, they're not as far along and they've been in existence far longer than the United States has. So for all the faults that the United States has, I mean, it's pretty far along in the grand scheme of things. You'd have to, you know, we'd have to agree with that. But anyway, well, let's carry on here. Through many clever power plays and the loopholes, the slightly outdated constitution, they, the many corruptors, have made the U.S. a socialist empire, devoid of rights, freedoms, or choice, subordinate to their elective representatives and the whim of their supposedly elected leader. The whole concept of socialism has been proven time and time again to be one of the most flawed forms of government. It has become increasingly simple to predict the collapse of socialism that even the lowly open-source advocate named Eric S. Raymond has been able to do it. He is just as you have before noted, a trend, and selected the most plausible outcome from that trend. The result of that trend was the Paris riots. Just look at his blog titled Armed and Dangerous. If you begin to look at things in this manner, the whole of socialist idealism begins to seem folly. For instance, you're in favor of socialized medicine. Well, I don't think I've really chimed in on whether or not I'm in favor of socialized medicine. I like the idea of people being able to get medicine and people who need medicine being able to get medicine. But anyway, it goes on to say here, but I promise you, Sean, that that is not a good idea. Social Security, Social Insurance Canada, is a concept whose origin has slipped my mind. I am sure, however, it originated in Europe. It was created as yet another power play. If there was a politic-based D&D, some of these bureaucrats would have stats off the motherfucking scale. This leader, who for clarity's sake I will deem Sir Pompous of Deceit, created the public retirement fund that he, of course, charged tax for. At the age for which you'd be collecting your payment from this program, it was 65. The arbitrary age of 65? Hell, why not? Why not 55? Because people were deceased by age 65 and therefore could not derive benefit from this public fund. So they had nearly an unlimited fund by which they could derive monetary gain with little overhead. The people who lived over 65, it also won the favor of the people. FDR did the same thing with his thinly veiled New Deal. If you look into Social Security even today, the fund is plundered regularly to cover deficit spending. Socialism creates a society of leaders and followers in which the leaders face no true accountability to anyone. Huzzah! Also, watch Michael Bendarek's Constitution class, or I will beat you with the sharp end of the six. Yours truly, the sharp end of the stick. Yours truly, Doobie X. Well, you know, it would seem to me that, you know, people have to kind of look after each other. You know, there is that there, but then again, there's a lot of people who are fucking useless. And I'm not afraid to say that. There are a lot of people out there floating around in the world right now. There are, in fact, totally fucking useless. Maybe useless is the wrong term. I'm sure they have a use. You know, maybe saying that everyone is useless. But there are... No. I would say that there's definitely people out there who, in fact, have no plausible benefit whatsoever. They do absolutely nothing good. Now, it could be argued that, you could put them to work. You know, you could have them working in labor camps and stuff like that. But that's not really that pleasant. And you start talking about labor camps. I get a little bit weird about, you know, putting people in camps to do labor. I don't know. It's just sort of... strikes me as kind of bad. You know, I don't really think that, you know, forcing people to do general labor is really a good thing. Now, the Republic concept, where you've got a bunch of people who agree on ideals, blah, 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 blah. This is, you know, there. But eventually, I think that this whole free market Republic thing and all that kind of jazz, I think that starts to go a little bit weird when you have to have a military, you know, because if you're completely free enterprise, you know, and you're like, well, we privatized the army. Well, yeah, the advantages to having a privatized army is that, you know, it doesn't draw from the general coffers of the people. But the downside to this is then you wind up with a private entity who doesn't answer to anyone, who, you know, has all the force. And what happens then? Well, then you wind up with the warlord state. You've set yourself up for a warlord state. So, you know, realistically, I think the only way that we're going to be able to get the human race to get together under one board here is we got to streamline a few things. And unfortunately, it seems to me that I guess the most efficient way to do this, judging by history, you know, and I'm going by history now. I'm just going by history, would seem to be doing it through force, you know. And I was thinking about this today. I was hanging around with Captain Whitebread, and I was thinking to myself, you know, geez, you know, why is it that people seem to be fighting all the time? Why is it that, you know, everybody seems to be constantly at each other's throats? Why is that? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, religion. Religion's a big one, you know. But when you stop, maybe religion can be used to a benefit. Religion is a very powerful thing. There are people who, you know, it's a meme, it's a thought form, it's an idea, it's a concept. that runs along, you know, and I've had some experience with how powerful this can be. I mean, I created Cult back in the day, right? It was a gag, tongue-in-cheek, totally not serious. You know, wasn't intended to be anything, but before I knew it, I had 800 members spanning over 50 countries, and people were like, lead us, Sean, lead us, and I'm like, holy crap! Not what I intended. This was supposed to be self-empowering, not, you know, let's all follow the leader. That's not the idea here. But people wanted that. That's what they wanted. And, of course, you know, at the time, I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. I'm sitting there going, well, I mean, that's the first time. I mean, who would think that? Who would think that if you wrote up some sort of a manual or a book and kind of started something that could be mistaken for a religion, that you'd wind up with members who were, like, all too willing to devote their lives to this cause? I mean, that's just insane to me. But I guess people are. Now, when you consider other things, like other religions around the world, you know, you look at Islam, you look at Christianity, you look at Judaism, you look at all these faiths, people are born into these families at a very young age. They're imprinted with this social ideal, this concept. And Jewish culture seems to get along very well with Jewish culture. Everybody's, you know, we're all Jews, everything's fine. Jews get along with Jews, everything's great. Same could be said, to some degree, of other religions. Of course, when you start having division, when people start to divide, you know, you had the Great Break where you had the Roman Catholic and you had the Presbyterian and all that other thing going on. You could look at that and go, well, you know, then it starts to divide and you wind up having division and splitters and it creates confusion and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, the Jews don't really have that. The Jews are just the Jews and that's it. There's no, like, subsect. Well, you know, I can't really say that. I'm not really up on that. You don't hear a lot about it. I'm sure there's other denominations of Judaism. There's, like, you know... But you see where I'm going with this, okay? Even if I'm sure that there's... Actually, now that I think of it, there are... there's, like, Hasidic Jews, and then there's, like, a few other sects of Jews that I can't remember. But you see where I'm going with this. There's... Usually, everybody's on the same page, unless somebody rises up and says, no, I don't agree with this. We're going to change our belief structure. And usually, that's a power play. You know, that's a power play where people go, oh, yeah, we're going to do this, blah, 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 blah. And invariably, you wind up with interreligious war, yada, yada, yada. But... the whole concept is that these folks have unity within their small sects, you know, until there's somebody has a problem with it, and then, you know, they decide to split, yada, yada, yada. Now, it could be argued that the people who split off, if when they just started talking about splitting, if they were killed, now this is, again, we're just totally going hypothetical here, but let's say, you know, when the Catholics had their big break there and they split into multiple denominations, what if, you know, the Vatican took their, like, Vatican Guard ninja guys, went around and just geeked all the priests who were saying, you know, well, we should, I don't like what the Pope is doing, we should be doing this, blah, 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 and they just killed them dead, bang, whack, the empirical hand of the Pope. What do you suppose would happen? Would Christianity have spawned out and spread out from being Catholic? And I put it to you that I don't think it would. So, that's an interesting point. You know, when you realize that, you go, So, if you have countries... and countries are just nothing more than a method of organizing property, things like that. And you look at the way things are set up. Maybe there's a way that somehow we could use religion to the benefit of humanity. Now, this is a wild concept. A wild, wild concept. Because, once again, when you start talking about religion and the concept of humanity, things get a little bit weird. You know, because everybody's like, well, I believe in these gods, that gods, those gods, these gods, blah, 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 blah. And it's usually he who has the oldest book wins. That's the way it used to work. You know, well, we found these scrolls were written in the beginning of antiquity, regardless of faith, you know, the songs of my father's fathers and all the rest of it. And depending on what region of the world you're in, it usually goes back, they reach it way back, and this is how it's been taught, and this is the tradition and the culture of our people, yada, yada, yada. And therefore, if other cultures war with our culture, you know, they disagree with these songs of our fathers, and yada, and this leads to war. So that's usually the basis, though, is some ancient document. That's where these religions are based. And then, of course, people, you know, when they divide, like with the Bible, okay, with the Catholics and the Pentecostals and the Baptists and all these guys, they all have their own interpretation of the Bible. You know, they all sit there, and then you got the Mormons who added to it, the Jehovah Witnesses who added to it. Everybody's got their own sort of take on what's going on with the Bible and so on and so forth. So everybody kind of adds to it and stuff like that because there's no real filter. There's no thing to stop you from adding to the Bible. You see, I mean, I could go write my own freaking version of the Bible right now. David Koresh did the same thing. I'm Jesus. Follow me. And a bunch of assholes did. Right? Charles Manson. Feed everybody acid. Claim you're the son of God. Off you go. The Beatles and me hanging out. So people will follow anybody. It's kind of bizarre and a little bit frightening that way. But that said, that's the paradigm. We got all these monkeys who will follow the Piper. So how are you going to take this species called humanity and elevate it? Well, okay, you got there's the noble ideas of educating everyone, but that's just simply not going to work because people need to have some kind of a belief operating system, apparently, to exist. Existing as a pure atheist is very, very difficult. People are like, well, we live, we born, we die, that's it. Blah. Because knowing that, what's the purpose of life? You know, why bother doing anything? Because we're just going to die. Let's just be hedonistic. And then you run into weird moral quandaries where people are like, well, whatever, as long as it feels good, do it. Because there is no right and wrong. It's only the number of people that agree with you, yada, yada, yada. And you wind up, that can make somebody very easily manipulated. You can create some very weird and sick societies with shit like that. And a lot of people go, well, who are you to judge what a sick society is? Well, my name's Sean, and I'm going to judge what a sick society is. Thank you very much. I mean, with the Ayatollah Khomeini, who's supposed to be such a shit-hot, you know, Muslim mullah guy, is talking about how it's okay to fuck little boys. Yeah, I kind of go, yeah, that's fucked up. Okay, that's all wrong and should be destroyed. So we got this religious, we got all these different religions going around the world. I'm not just picking on the Muslims. I'm not picking on the Jews. I'm not picking on anybody here. I'm just saying there's a billion different religions running around the world. Then, of course, we're not even talking about shamanic faiths and things like that where people have, you know, experiences. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here. Spirituality, like it or not, is a big part of the human species. And different people, because people have a different sense of spirituality, it has a tendency to become a source of division between people. Language, culture, all these things are sources of division. And now it could be argued, well, Sean, what's the big deal? Why not just have, you know, why not be diverse? Why not have all these different cultures and ideas and concepts and everyone's a distinct society? Well, because, again, we have to, in order to get to space, which is, again, my overriding sort of draw here, is that we have to become a space-born race. We have to become, the human race has to get to the stars. If we don't do that, well, we're just going to wind up dying on this rock. Sooner or later, we're going to wind up dying on this rock. Now, it could be argued that, there's a lot of things in our culture that seem to be, you know, there's a lot of things with humankind that seem to be preventing us from getting together and unifying. There's all sorts of racial shit going on in the United States where all these different races are trying to, you know, keep everybody apart. Certain governmental things are said. They talk about the blacks and they talk about the whites and blah, blah, blah. Well, if you stop talking about blacks and whites as blacks and whites, and just talk about everybody's people, maybe we could all start getting along. But, of course, we got, you know, cultural things going on there, and there's a lot of differences. So it's very difficult to do this. This is one of the reasons why religion is helpful. You can have religions where, you know, you're black, you're Chinese, I'm white, the other guy's from, you know, some other country somewhere. Doesn't really matter because we all believe in the same God. Oorah, kumbaya, we're all good friends here. This is the concept. So if you're going to, you know, look at trying to create unity, unity seems to be a little bit easier if you can alter people's belief structure so we all believe the same thing. If everyone believes the same thing, unity becomes a lot easier. And some people say, well, that's mind control, Sean. And I would say, yes, it probably is. But we all have mind control every day. Everybody gets social programming from TV sitcoms and TV shows like Friends and whatnot. All this stuff is everywhere. Can't get away from it. You know, people are inherently, you know, they want to emulate what they see on TV. Monkey see, monkey do. It's what they're all about. I don't really understand it, but that's how it works. So, we are aware, then, one, we have a lot of things that divide us on this planet. We got cultures and all this kind of stuff. Another thing that serves to divide us on the planet, yet unify us on a smaller scale, is religion. And this is why, you know, missionaries go to Africa and they gradually span out and it becomes westernized because they go to Africa. They convert people's Christianity. That's a first step. Everybody starts learning English, blah, 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 blah. So you can see how this, you know, missionary work has becomes very, very, it's useful in a political spectrum, right? Because we have to have unity. Now, again, I do not believe that humankind is ever going to accomplish getting spaceborne and sorting itself out. The only way we're ever going to have world peace is if we all decide to follow one sort of edict and idea. We have to have a one world government of some type. Some people say, I don't want to have a one world government. Well, if we don't have a one world government, that means that there'll be two different governments at the minimum. And eventually it'll turn into a war over resources and people will start fighting again. So if you only have one government, that removes the possibility of war. You can't really get around that. Well, how do you determine then who's supposed to be in charge? Well, currently, the model we're using right now is Darwinian sort of evolution. You know, the culture that is the strongest will survive. We will use war, we will use economics, we'll use whatever it takes to destroy each other's culture, so on and so forth. Now, a lot of people, I cannot be denied that the United States with their republic concept is pretty wild. It's pretty good stuff. The United States was founded by Christians. That's what they were. George Washington, hardcore Christian. Owned slaves, smoked a lot of weed, but he was also a hardcore Christian. Okay, so we got a lot of, you know, and that can be seen quite easily when you have, like, one nation under God. God's all over the basis of the United States. And now, as people are eroding at the religious principles of the United States, you know, a lot of people are getting freaked out because, well, these are the ground rules. These are the things that we put in the United States. You start taking God out of the United States, and then, I mean, who's to say that the United States won't fall apart? We've got nothing sacred anymore. Well, we got the Constitution, right, which is this document that was drawn up. But if you don't, unless you worship the Constitution, think of it as a sacred thing, which, you know, atheists don't think anything's sacred because there's no such thing as sacred, then, you know, that could just be something that could be added to or taken away from or whatever. So it becomes really sketchy. Everything becomes kind of fluid when you don't have religion involved. So how do you come up with a religion, okay, that is, number one, cross-cultural, okay, that everybody can follow and everybody can, you know, kind of understand and go along with? And I've given this a lot of thought. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on regarding religion. I mean, you know, you look at a lot of religions, they all got sort of the same sort of idea. Be nice to each other, help each other out, be nice to little old ladies, feed children, stuff like that, usually. Any religion that's worth a damn. You know, that's what they say. A lot of religions are like, gays are bad. You know, this is another common trend. You see that a lot in religion. Gays are bad. The reason why I think people believe gays are bad is, well, it's a lot of these old religions are written by scared men. And a lot of these scared men don't like gay men because they're scared. Also, I suppose if, you know, maybe there's breeding problems, I guess, back in the day, if you had, like, a bunch of tribesmen and stuff like that, I'm just trying to guess that gay men wouldn't have sex and therefore would be able to impregnate women, but I can't really see that being a cause because there's usually no shortage of men who want to nail chicks. But I digress. How do we come up with a concept, some sort of an idea, a concept of a faith, a religion, that everyone can agree upon and everyone can follow that not only exists, has always existed, and can be readily proven and filtered from time to time to make sure that our doctrine, whatever that doctrine may be, does not become dogma so that your faith becomes solid? I began to think about this, you know. I'm like, geez, that's a big, tall order. You know, that's one of those kind of Buddhist imponderables going on there. So I was thinking about that. And then I remembered something that happened to me a while back. You know, back when I was in the service, I remember I went to a Remembrance Day ceremony. And at that ceremony, because at that time, the base I was on, there was Germans there and Canadians there. And I found this to be really weird. Because, you know, Remembrance Day at that time, I was this was back in the 90s. And really, you know, it's about the Second World War, you know, up in Canada. A lot of stuff made about the Second World War when the Germans were the bad guys. Okay, the Germans were, you know, it was Hermann the German. That was what the Figure 11 targets were. And it was all the Germans, the Nazis. Terrible evil of the Nazis. They're taking over the world, blah, 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 blah. Must go kill the Nazis, right? And here we are, years later, where it's like literally the sons of men who were killed by the fathers of the other men are standing on a parade ground together honoring war dead. Even though years prior, they were screaming enemies. And this isn't like generations here. We're talking like maybe 50 years difference between this. That's a drop in the bucket. When you look in the Middle East, there's been war going on over there where families have been pitted against families for thousands of years. People are pissed off with shit that happened 5,000 years ago. Well, this is stuff where, you know, my father was killed by your father, like, only 50 years ago. And yet these guys are able to stand up there and honor their war dead and then go get drunk together. And that really struck me. I mean, that's really something to see the children of soldiers who were, and I mean deadly enemies, vicious fighting, some of the savage fighting known, you know, and then before that, the First World War, the same way. savage, brutal warfare, and yet afterwards they're all able to get together and talk and shit like that. Very, very weird to me. So I started looking at that and thinking, well, why is that? There's a few things in all cultures which are transcended. They go past the culture, and it's like a human thing. For example, sex. Sex is one of those things that, you know, are pretty similar in all cultures. You know what I mean? We're all humans. You know, everybody's got the same little dangly bits. Everybody has sex pretty much, you know, the same sort of idea, same sort of way. I mean, positions change a little bit, and the whole of choice alters slightly. But generally, if you want to decide to impregnate the woman, you have to, you know, kind of exercise sex, at least with these certain basic requirements here. So that's one way. Crying. That's another thing that most people do similar the same way. Wailing despair. That's something that everybody has in common. And usually what causes wailing despair is the other thing that all cultures seem to have in common, and that is violence. Violence. Everybody knows, regardless of culture, the effects of violence. Now, the Japanese, like, these were people who took violence to, like, they really got violence sorted out. I mean, they got that whole thing down, the whole Budo mindset and all that kind of jazz. And a lot of folks, even though they were the enemy and stuff like that, they could look at this Japanese Budo, this military soldiering mindset, and they could honor it. They'd look at that and say, wow, you know, look how great this is. You know, look at their method and their honor and their style of fighting, and here's their weak points, here's where they went wrong. But I mean, generally, this is how they were able to have their mindset for their soldiers, and what amazing soldiers they were. And you don't find that in religion. You don't find that where, you know, the Jews look at, you know, the Muslims and they go, well, you know, we're looking at their Bible here and, oh, wow, look how great this is. You know, look how wonderful, you know, they got this whole concept here about this and that and the other thing. You know, look how wonderful that. You never see that in religion. You'll never get, like, Mormons going to, you know, the Quran and going, oh, boy, this book has got some great stuff in it, let me tell ya. There's a few religious scholars who will pull that stuff off. But generally, doesn't really happen. So it seems to me that throughout history, the only people who seem to do that are not, you know, it doesn't matter what your political ideology is, but it seems that soldiers will do that. Soldiers. Soldiers will invariably drink with soldiers. You go to a bar, there'll be a bunch of short hairs sitting in the corner. You walk over there, oh yeah, this guy's French, the other guy's from, Iranian Special Forces, the guy over there, yeah, these guys are all McAfee SOG, ex-Phoenix program guys, oh yeah, we got some picklies over here. They're all soldiers. They all know what is involved with war. And this is very interesting. Very, very interesting. And that's, you know, as I was thinking about this today, I was talking about this with Captain Whitebread, I thought, what if... And this is one of those dangerous kind of conversations, I know. This is why I'm talking about it on the news show here. So I get some feedback about this to make sure, you know, I'm not going totally insane, which is kind of handy, or maybe actually could be kind of a foregone conclusion at this point. But let's say there was some sort of, like, instead of a, you know, you had the Catholic, the Muslim, the Jew, you know, the Mormon, the Jehovah Witness. What if there was some kind of a way that you could create a religious edict, a doctrine, an idea based upon generations, multicultural generations of soldiering? What a concept. Soldiers as a faith, being a soldier as a religion, where you have, you know, people would say, well, that's a pretty wild, it's kind of Warhammer 40K there, Sean. Yeah, that's true. I'm kind of getting near the Empire sort of stage of things. You know, then at that stage, your officers would become more like your teacher types. They'd probably become more like your priests, you know, the different ranking of the priests. And then you'd have the soldiers, which would be, I mean, I'm not too sure how that would work. Maybe there's a couple of different ways you could work that. Or maybe instead of being even having officers, you just do away with the officer corps altogether and make it sort of a completely non-com sort of setup where there's only one rank structure. And as you go up in the ranks, these are certain responsibilities that happen as you go higher and higher. That would actually be pretty handy because you could probably get rid of a lot of the bullshit. And one less divide. The whole officer system was set up so that the rich people could not die in the war. They could make all the poor people die in the war. This is the concept. And you look at guys like Chesty Puller from the Marines. who was he won four Navy Crosses, one of the greatest military combat commanders of all time. He often said that, all these officers, they don't have any combat training. They have no combat experience, so they're losing the combat mindset, and it goes on and on and on. Now, also, the other fashion of this is that as wars carry on, wars become this, you always hear people talking about war, the temperance of war being, bloodied and all that kind of stuff in battle. And a lot of bullshit kind of falls by the wayside once you actually enter combat. The dogma hits the floor pretty fucking fast in times of war. Okay? And those who have got it going on and are pretty much know what's happening, they survive combat. Because combat is unpredictable and all sorts of stuff. So you become veterans. You see where I'm going with this? So it becomes a method of kind of keeping the filter going. Which is not to say that, war is a good thing. Nothing of the sort. But I would put it to you that war is probably unavoidable until we get everybody on the same page. Well, what about the people, Sean, who aren't militaristic? What about the people who don't belong in the army? What about those guys? How would they fit in this weird-ass soldier religion you got under? Oh, I'm not even saying it's religion right now. I mean, it's just an idea right now. I mean, I'm just throwing this out there to the internet for people to look at this and say, what do you think of that? Instead of, saying Catholic, I'm soldier. It has nothing to do with your nation. It has nothing to do with, it has to do with the nature of what it is to be a soldier. And I don't mean just, the idea of having the knife in the teeth and jumping out of the airplane. I'm talking, there's all kinds of things that are involved with, soldiering, the aspect of working through suffering and, sacrifice for gain and all this kind of stuff. Maybe this has already been done. I can't believe I'd be the first guy to think of this. I'm sure that there's something out there. Anybody's got any feedback or stuff that, they think is very similar to what I'm talking about here, I'd love to hear about it. Newsreel at rantradio.com set me up. Kind of an interesting concept. Let's get rid of the gods and everything and just look at what's involved with the actual skills and history and, tempered truth, the battle truth that comes from soldiering. It's kind of an interesting concept. And then from there, there's other skills that would get involved, yada, yada, yada. It's kind of a cool idea. Thought that up today, and thought I'd just throw it out there before I did anything really crazy, before I made any kind of jokes about it or anything. It's just an idea, just a concept. Let me know what you think about it. I'd be really interested to hear what some people think about that, because when you look at history, there's always seems to be these empires are the things that seem to last the longest. Unless I'm wrong there, maybe somebody can re-educate me as to that, but I would say the empires seem to last the longest. So, that would mean that maybe we should have like an empire of humanity. We should start working on an actual human empire where humans just, accept other humans and they come in on board with us. And if they don't come on board with the humanity, with the way the humans operate, then I guess we destroy them. That would probably be how that would work. It's usually how it works in this kind of a scenario. It's not very nice, but there it is, I don't know. Something to think about. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the show, right? I'm supposed to be trying to get you guys to think about stuff. But enough of this gaiety. Let's get into the news. In global warming news, Nawa Jigtar was working in the village of Ghat in Nepal when the sound of crashing sent him rushing out of his home. He emerged to see his herd of cattle being swept away by a wall of water in the mountains of Nepal. Jigtar and his fellow villagers were able to scramble to safety if they were lucky. Oh, pardon me, they were lucky. If it had come at night, none of us would have survived. Ghat was destroyed when a lake high in the Himalayas burst its banks, swollen with glacier meltwaters. Its walls of rock and ice had suddenly disintegrated. Several million cubic meters of water crashed down the mountain. When Ghat was destroyed in 1985, such incidences were rare, but not anymore. Last week, scientists revealed that it has been a tenfold jump in such catastrophes in the last two decades, the results of global warming. Himalayan glacier lakes are filling up with more and more melted ice. 24 of them are now poised to burst their banks in Bhutan, with a similar number at risk in Nepal. But that is just the beginning. A report in Nature said last week, future disasters around the Himalayas will include floods, droughts, land erosion, biodiversity loss, and changes in rainfall and the monsoon. The roof of the world is changing, as can be seen by Nepal's Khambu Glacier, where Hillary and Tenzing began their 1953 Everest expedition. It has retreated 3 miles since their ascent. Almost 95% of the Himalayan glaciers are also shrinking. And that kind of ice loss has profound implications, not just for Nepal and Bhutan, but surrounding nations including China, India, and Pakistan. Eventually, the Himalayan glaciers will shrink so much their meltwaters will dry up, say scientists. Catastrophes like Gat will die out. At the same time, rivers fed by these melting glaciers, such as Indus, Yellow River, and Mekong, will turn into trickles. Drinking and irrigation water will disappear. Hundreds of millions of people will be affected. And, of course, following that will come starvation. There is a short-term danger of too much water coming out of the Himalayas, and a greater long-term danger of there not being enough, said Dr. Phil Porter, University of Hertfordshire. Either way, it's easy to pinpoint the cause: global warming. According to Nature, temperatures in the region have increased by more than 1 degree Celsius recently and are set to rise by a further 1.2 degrees Celsius by 2050 and by 3 degrees centigrade by the end of the century. This heating has already caused 24 of Bhutan's glacial lakes to reach potentially dangerous status, according to government officials. Nepal is similarly affected. A glacial lake catastrophe happened once in a decade 50 years ago, said UK geologist John Reynolds, who company advises Nepal. 5 years ago, they were happening every 3 years. By 2010, a glacial lake catastrophe will happen every year. Interesting. Now, this is one of those kind of things where, you know, this kind of ties back to that whole soldiering idea I had. You know, how would having a culture that was based along a militaristic guideline help with something like this? Well, the one thing that even the detractors would say for militaristic society, would they'd have to agree with, is that in a militaristic society, shit gets done. You know, things happen. That's why everybody's so upset now that the Marines are actually getting into the whole Special Forces group thing, because, you know, the Marines have a certain way of making sure shit happens. They don't fuck around a lot. So now, you know, a lot of the bureaucrats and guys who try to tie stuff up and just make money from it are all getting freaked out because this sort of Marine Corps military edict of let's make shit happen is starting to get into the special forces groups and stuff like that and becoming more and more dominant in the military circles, which you'd think that it's all like that, but unfortunately the military is not as switched on as it could be, but I digress. But I guarantee if you needed to respond to something like this, you would need a militaristic organization to respond to it rapidly and effectively, because you have direction and you have purpose. So it's not even an arguable point that in a time of crisis, the military is the best model to use for some of these kinds of responses. And I put it to you with this global warming thing going on. Well, there's a lot of reason to have something like that as a society because, well, shit is getting pretty intense. Speaking of intense shit, let's talk about some desert war news. Baghdad's Medical Forensic Institute, the mortuary, is a low, modern building reached via a narrow street. Most days, it is filled with families of the dead. They come here for two reasons. One group, animated and noisy in grief, comes to collect its dead. The other, however, returns day after day to poke through the new cargoes of corpses ferried in by ambulance, looking for a face or clothes they might recognize. They are relatives and friends of the quote-unquote disappeared, searching for their men. And when the disappeared are finally found on the streets in the city's massive rubbish dumps or in the river, their bodies bear the all-too-telling signs of a savage beating, often with electric cables, followed by the inevitable bullet to the head. Interesting. So what's going on here? Why are these people who are getting, quote-unquote, disappeared, getting disappeared? Who are they, who's doing all this? In a new twist in the ongoing brutality in this country, Iraqi-on-Iraqi violence is escalating dramatically. Holy crap. Last July, an Observer investigation reported that Iraqi police commandos were running a secret torture unit. This is in their own country. And last week, there was an international outrage when an Iraqi government bunker was found being used as a makeshift prison. American forces found 173 half-starved prisoners being held in dreadful conditions. Most were Sunnis. Well, it's a religious thing again. God, I love religion. The new trend in violence is one that Dr. Ala Maki of the Iraqi Islamic Party is familiar with. A month ago, his bodyguard, Ala Al-Zawi, was taken from his home with his two brothers by police at midnight. The family were told the men were being taken for investigation. The following day, his body was dumped in the street. Well, some officers took him, so I guess, you know, this is what you get when you have a warlord kind of state. 8 days ago, another of Mackey's friends were being treated in the Yarmouk Hospital, Iraq's second biggest, in the western suburbs of Baghdad. His relatives, Mumar Asad Mahoum and Ali Mahoud, went to visit him. Instead, they met a man in uniform and Iraq's police waiting for them. Ali was later released in the vast Shia slum of Sadr City after a violent beating. Mumar has not been seen. Dr. Mackey and the family are now waiting for his body to turn up. Now, why? You'd look at this and hear this story, and it goes on about more and more about the disappearance. So you'd ask yourself, why is this happening? Why is this happening right now? Why is that going on? Is it a power play? Is it because people want to have, you know, establish themselves in positions of power? Is this a money thing? Is it because they're worried about political, power, who's being an informant, you know, who's the enemy of the state, that kind of a thing? Why is this happening? And clearly, you know, this is not uncommon. This is kind of standard practice for this culture, I guess, is the best way to say it. I mean, everyone's really upset about it, but, you know, they're looking at it, and it seems to be happening. So what's the answer here? Well, you got to stop it. And the only way you're going to be able to stop something like that is to get pretty serious about how you ferret that crap out. And, yeah, that means that, you get a hold of the guys who are doing this and say, well, why are you doing this? Well, we're doing them because they're Sunnis. We're doing it because they're Sunnis, and we hate the Sunnis. And who tells you to do this? Our religious leaders. Well, the religious leaders need to be dealt with. Because if the religious leaders are causing people to be tortured and half-starved in bunkers, that's not so good. Or getting near the area of, like, hardcore hate crimes and stuff like that. Like, this is, it's got to get nailed down. We decided to go in there and, of our own volition, we've decided that we're going to go in there and sort out that culture. That's what we're going to do. Well, now we're there, and we better sort it out, because if we don't, you're going to get this kind of shit going on. And yeah, that means that certain people who will not accept the new thought forms are going to wind up those people who, don't get politically re-educated to an idea of getting along peaceably and being all free and stuff. I guess they get dead. I guess that's how that's got to go. I can't really see another way for that to happen. I'm not trying to be, flippant about it. It's fucking horrible. It's absolutely atrocious. But hooking people up to electrodes and cooking them for no good reason, just beating the shit out of them and shooting them in the head, there's nothing to be gained from this. Why are they doing it? Is this just because they get off on it? Well, time may tell. Now in space news, again, one of my more shining reasons why I like humanity. In space news, we may soon know the answer. A NASA Stanford's physics experiment called the Gravity Bee Probe recently finished a year of gathering science data in Earth orbit. The results, which will take another year to analyze, should reveal the shape of space-time around Earth and possibly the vortex. Space-time vortex. This is really crazy shit. Time and space, according to Einstein's theories of relativity, are woven together, forming a four-dimensional fabric called space-time. The tremendous mass of Earth dimples this fabric, much like a heavy person sitting in the middle of a trampoline. Gravity, says Einstein, is simply the motion of objects following the curvaceous lines of the dimple. If Earth were stationary, that would be the end of the story. But Earth is not stationary. Our planet spins, and the spin should twist the dimple, slightly pulling it around into a four-dimensional swirl. This is what Gravity Probe B went out into space to check. The idea behind the experiment is simple. Put a spinning gyroscope into orbit around the Earth with the spin axis pointing towards some distant star as a fixed reference point. Free from external forces, the gyroscope's axis should continue pointing at the star forever. But if space is twisted, the direction of the gyroscope's axis should drift over time. By noting this change in direction relative to the star, the twists of space-time could be measured. In practice, the experiment is tremendously difficult. Four gyroscopes in Gravity Port B are the most perfect spheres ever made by humans. These ping-pong-sized balls of fused quartz and silicon are 1.5 inches across and never vary from the perfect sphere by more than 40 atomic layers. The gyroscopes weren't so spherical. If the gyroscopes were not so spherical, their spin axles would wobble even without the effects of relativity. According to calculations, the twisted space-time around Earth should cause the axis of the gyros to drift merely 0.041 arcseconds over a year. An arcsecond is 1/3,600th of a degree. To measure this angle reasonably well, Gravity B needed a fantastic precision of 0.0005 arcseconds. It's like measuring the thickness of a sheet of paper held held edge-on 100 miles away. That's some pretty intense stuff. And from this data sample, they're going to determine whether or not Einstein was right. I don't know, man. I don't know. A lot of this science is, you know, when you hear stuff like that about people making a scientific theory about, the, you know, the formation of the universe based upon those kind, that kind of a data sample, kind of makes me wonder a little bit. Now, here's something to add to that. Okay, Francis Crick, Nobel Prize winning father of modern genetics. Okay, this guy was, you know, pretty much the guy who came up with the double helix structure. He was under the influence of LSD, acid, when he first deduced the double helix structure of DNA nearly 50 years ago. The abrasive and unorthodox Crick and his brilliant American co-researcher James Watson famously celebrated their eureka moment on March 1953 by running from the now legendary Cavendish Laboratory in Cambridge to the nearby Eagle Pub, where they announced over pints of bitter that they had discovered the secret of life. Crick, who died some time ago, aged 88, later told a fellow scientist that he often uses small doses of LSD through an experimental drug used in psychotherapy to boost his powers of thought. He said it was LSD, not the Eagle's warm beer, that helped him unravel the structure of DNA, the discovery that won him the Nobel Prize. Now, let's not, you know, get all excited about this and decide we're all going to go out and start dropping acid. But, you know, when you look at this, you've got to realize that maybe, you know, the concept that we are only as good as our drugs and technology make us might have some sort of bearing. There might be some truth in there. Today's daily hack is a do-it-yourself cell phone. This is a pretty sexy daily hack. Got this one from Pig Monkey, I believe. It is not uncommon for the technically inclined folks to build their own PCs out of basic parts, although it's not necessarily cheaper to do so. One can build exactly the setup one wants, with exactly the components and function. In addition, we shouldn't disconnect the satisfaction of having put together a useful device with one's own hands. But are cellular phones significantly harder to build than PCs? What would it take to make a homebrew phone that would still work on standard networks? Which means that you would then know exactly what was going on inside of your phone. And a handful of hackers wanted to find out. They did, and they have it here for your approval. Very, very cool. And that's all I've got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This would be a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 65 people, 11 one-time donators, 52 continuing subscribers, with 2 new subscribers as well. And if you'd like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of the pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to check out the pick up the album by Rob Zombie called The Sinister Urge. And I'm going to leave you now with a track from the Matrix soundtrack called Navras, one of my favorite tracks, for obvious reasons. So until tomorrow, that is what Server said. End of line.